hear people talking right about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on the wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. And I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in thought and dying to be. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count and be free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a foreign dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a foreign dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me, and that's the name of this program. Here on lightresistanceradio.com. Well, that's more news and views for our people. And, of course, those are the European founding settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and, of course, all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, I'm back in Port Credit after a week away out west. A number of stops. A great picnic on Saturday in Vancouver with supporters of Your War News and Brian Rue and some new recruits. A beautiful afternoon on the beach on English Bay, really beautiful. Lovely place, lovely afternoon. One problem is, of course, Vancouver is a, this is Kitsilano Beach incidentally. Vancouver is a real car-hating city, and it took me an hour and 20 minutes driving around and around and around to find a parking spot. But other than that, great day. Then yesterday, Sunday, I was in Edmonton for a great talk. And not a talk I gave, incidentally. This is a talk by Monica Schaefer. And Monica stirred things up a little over a year ago. Monica had the has gradually become more enlightened. Was something of an environmentalist, and there's nothing wrong with that. She's a Green Party member, Green Party candidate on four different occasions, strongly about the environment, contributed to the community. She lived in the mountain community. Actually, it's a mountain and kind of progressive community called Jasper. And the people in Jasper are a little bit unlike others in Alberta. Many come from other places. They consider themselves very progressive, new agey, all those types of things. Monica, a few years ago, became aware that, let's say, the standard story about 911 was, not accurate, to be kind about it. In other words, a lie. It doesn't really matter which of the alternative stories you might believe, the official version was substantially a lie. Anyway, that led her to skepticism about other things that we'd been told, including the Holocaust, the so-called Holocaust. Now, Monica was born of two German parents who came to Canada in the 50s. Both, of course, had been through the Second World War, but as teenagers. And Monica was born and grew up in Canada. She grew up in Edmonton, Alberta. And at that time, there was quite a bit of anti-German feeling. Now, this is a little bit before the Holocaust. Well, in her early years, this is a little bit before the Holocaust quite became the new religion it is today. But still, as the Holocaust industry really began to hit its stride in the 1970s with the movie called The Holocaust, on the Holocaust, and it became a big thing, a big deal. She like many other people, accepted what she'd heard, and berated her mother. Berated the mother, saying roughly, "Well, Mom, how could you let this happen? Why didn't you do something?" And all her mother ever said to her is, "We just didn't know." Well, they didn't know for a good reason. There was nothing to know. It didn't happen. Now, that didn't mean that many Jews were sent to internment camps. They were. Not all, but many were. Did some die there? Yes. Were some Jews murdered? Yes, they were. But the wholesale mass murder of 6 million Jews didn't happen. And so when the mother, perhaps in it naively or otherwise, said to Monica, "We didn't know," what she really meant was, well, we didn't know because, frankly, it didn't happen. Monica was not completely satisfied by that. And the years went by, and her mother, both her parents died. And she began in the past couple of years to understand the truth that, in fact, the thing that's called the Holocaust didn't happen. Or not the way we're told. There weren't 6 million Jews. It wasn't the greatest crime in all of history. Hitler didn't gas, or the National Socialists didn't gas them en masse. There was no planned extermination. There were individual killings, especially on the Eastern Front, of people quite often who were partisans. Were there some Jews killed unfairly? Yeah, of course they were. It was wartime. Bad things happen. That's the problem with war. War, bad stuff happens in war. Okay. So Monica, now having discovered the truth, did a video, and this is the thing that changed her life. And that was in mid-June of 2016. And the video had a very fetching title, and it was called, "Sorry, Mom, I Was Wrong About the Holocaust." And she apologizes to her dead mother for having berated her, for having accused her, as idealistic teenagers sometimes do. "Well, why didn't you do something?" I suggest this is naive because teenagers are in the first flush of youth and sometimes idealism think that things can be solved very easily. All I have to do is, "Why didn't you do something?" Well, what exactly could a woman who was a teenager herself in Germany in 1941 or 1942 or 1943 or 1944 or 1945, well, what would she have done? You know, so anyway, this video went, as they say, viral. And then it was translated into German. She speaks German as well, so she did the same video in German. So it's in German and English. You can still get it on YouTube. Sorry, Mom, I was wrong about the Holocaust. Well, it had huge repercussion, particularly in her own hometown of Jasper. Now, you have to understand that Monica had been a big contributor to the community over the years. She plays the violin. She taught violin lessons. She played in many local bands. If there was a benefit, she would always volunteer to play for free. She was a real contributor to the community. She wasn't some obscure recluse, and she had many, many friends and even more acquaintances. And her story about what happened in that town of Jasper is absolutely shocking, of how many in the town turned against her. And even those who maybe still quietly support her, or at least think, as we used to, I mean, this used to be just ordinary common sense and common parlance. Look, I don't agree with what you say, or at least I don't think I agree with what you believe, but you've got the right to say it. Well, not anymore. The idea was she was to be drummed out of town. A man who was the head of the Legion, and that Legion is a big fixture in small town Canada. In many small towns, it's a place where people meet to socialize. There'll be small musical concerts, benefits, sometimes if you're putting together a dinner for somebody, you have it at the Legion. It's a socializing place. What's more important than it might be in a big city? Well, the head of the Legion, a man by the name of Ken Kosminski, banned her. She's banned from the Legion. No reason given. She's banned because she has the wrong ideas. He also said, and he's not the mayor, and nobody appointed him God or king, he said she should not live in Jasper. She has no place in this town. Well, of course, he didn't have the power to drive her out of town. But many people shunned her. She lost all of her music pupils. One by one, last September, they all dropped out. Obviously under social pressure. She had a great reputation as a music teacher. She had a great reputation in town. But she had the wrong ideas. And then, you see, this is how this insidious process of shunning works. First of all, Doug Christie pinpointed this many years ago. He said, this is the way the process works. Demonize, isolate, criminalize. So, first of all, she's demonized through the gossip mails and the local paper, you know, neo-Nazi, Holocaust denier. Some of her friends allegedly were bad folks like me. Or I should say, in those days, not even her friend, just a supporter, political supporter. She's being persecuted. That was my position. There's the defamation. And then the isolation. You know, once she's defamed as a bad person, well, then she can be isolated. And see, the isolation is more than just, I don't want to associate with her. But others then say, well, look, if I associate with her, maybe they'll do the same thing to me. And this is the diabolical thing about these organized campaigns of demonization. They defame you with weaponized words. And nobody debates you. Nobody ever came up to her and said, Monica, you know, I think you've got it wrong about the Holocaust for this reason. And give her an explanation and say, look, this is where you're wrong. No. She is simply demonized. The usual loaded or weaponized words. And so she quickly found herself very much isolated. And indignity was heaped upon indignity on this poor woman who had so contributed to the town. And see, I've always thought that, look, it may be easy to hate or strongly dislike or shun somebody you don't know. You know, somebody tells you this person is a bad person. Well, why? Well, she denies the Holocaust. Okay, supposing that is of some importance to you, I can understand shunning somebody you don't know. But Monica was a known quantity and had many friends and many acquaintances in Jasper, including one of her big tormentors, and that was this Ken Kosminski guy, who's the president of the Legion. He'd been the Socialist Party or New Democratic Party candidate in several elections, where Monica had been the Green Party candidate. And they carpooled to get to all candidates' meetings because it's quite a large riding. It wasn't as if he didn't know her. In fact, he did know her, and she considered him not necessarily a friend exactly, but a good acquaintance. They shared things together. Now, you would think, and I would have said the same thing. It would be hard to treat her like that. But so fanatical was the town that was this insidious new religion of Holocaust, and most of the people tormenting her were not Jews. There are not a lot of Jews. There are some Jews in Jasper, but they're not a lot. No, it wasn't the Jews per se that were her big tormentors. It was willing fools. Anyway, so life was made very difficult for Monica this past year, and then the ultimate punishment, I guess. Monica had for years lobbied to get Jasper to permit busking. Now, busking, if it's not a familiar term to you, means a person who starts to play music, let's say on a street corner or in a park, and if it's and they leave a box there, and you know, and if you like what you hear, you toss in a dollar or a loonie or a few cents or a $5. It's all free. It's all your own choice, and this seemed to be something that would be worthwhile for a small town, which is also a big tourist town, and she lobbied for this for several years. Well, anyway, finally last year, the city council approved busking would be approved, but one would have to get a permit. So the first to apply for a permit was Monica. And she was told that she could not have the permit because her ideas, as expounded on the video, "Sorry Mom, I was not wrong about the Holocaust," were not inclusive. So she didn't have inclusive views, whatever that is. Well, tell me, what's an inclusive view? I don't know. She didn't say, "I don't want to associate with anybody who is not, you know, this race or that race or this religion or that religion." She didn't say anything about that. And she had been very, very generous with her time over many years, volunteering for various, community action projects or good deeds and good work. So in what way was Monica not inclusive? Well, I didn't have to tell her. That was the bright idea. So it's been a tough year. Well, this summer again, but Monica is a fighter. This summer, again, when the warm weather comes, which would be, I guess, in June or so, there were a few people out busking. So Monica went out and joined them. Now, she did not put open her violin case or solicit donations, so she didn't. She wasn't actually busking because she wasn't taking any money for it. And she is very popular. She every day of July, except for a short time that she was at a fiddling conference or workshop, and she would go out for about an hour or more each day, various parts of town, and play her violin. And got tremendously positive support from many people, particularly tourists. And some of them, because she didn't have her violin case open, assumed that the city must be paying her to do this. And what a nice thing for the city to do. It just brings so much joy and to people. Well, of course, she isn't being paid. So she is going to be in the process, and I don't want to give away her plans before she actually does them, but she's going to be in the process. Oh, yeah, she applied for permanent gain this year. Well, now the granting of the permits has actually been fobbed off to a community arts group. Now, this is probably illegal. The city grants the permits. The city would enforce any infraction. If somebody busts without a permit, it would be violating a city bylaw. But they I guess to avoid, because she's well known in town. So to try to fob off responsibility, they fobbed it off on this arts group. Well, the arts group came up with an elaborate system of application. You have to apply, and then you have to do an audition. And now nobody denies, in fact, everybody says, Monica is a great fiddle player, a violin player, and for years taught violin lessons. So, I mean, clearly she's, there's no question about her competence. Anyway, there are even guidelines about the audition. Well, at the audition, person auditioning to play whatever they were playing should be made to feel comfortable and shouldn't be asked too many difficult questions, and should give a list of tunes or songs that they're particularly good at, and be allowed to select the one or two that they will play for the audition, and blah 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 blah. So Monica, on several occasions, tried to get an opportunity for an audition. They wouldn't give it to her. They finally said, "Oh, you don't have to. Just send in a tape of some of your songs or some of your tunes." She did. And she was again turned down. Let me think. The reason given. I'm not quite sure what reason they gave for this time. This has cost her money. I mean, this is part of the way she makes a living. She's being denied the right to make her living because they will not grant her a busking permit. And they're violating their own rules. They didn't give her an audition, which is apparently what they're supposed to do. They didn't follow their own rules. Oh, yeah, she asked, well, who was on the committee? The committee that will adjudicate whether, I guess, you're sufficiently good at playing music or singing to busk. I don't think you have to be particularly good. It's actually really quite silly, because the customer will decide. If you pass by some guy who can't carry a tune in a knapsack, you're probably not going to throw a quarter or a nickel or a loonie or a $10 bill into the box that he might have in front of him. The public decides. And of course, music, as with so many other things, is very much a personal matter. I mean, I wouldn't give a plug nickel for somebody singing reggae. I mean, reggae music, I don't like it. Whether they're talented or not, I don't like it. Or jazz. I mean, I'm no big fan of jazz. They might, in fact, be good. I mean, but that's for the public to decide. Anyway, she is looking for ways to challenge this decision, which is clearly discriminatory. And she's had some very interesting incidents as she's played around town. A lot of very positive support. She got into a confrontation, some young people, some of whom were Jews, confronted her and you deny the Holocaust, as if this was going to be a big revelation, and people would draw back in horror. And she said to that person, "I'm very happy you don't confuse me with somebody so stupid as to still believe that stuff. That's a line her brother Alfred has used, and it's actually quite good. Well, this person didn't know what to say and started screaming at her. And she just continued to play her violin, and there were people at an outdoor cafe, I guess it was across the small street, and when she finished that song, there was a big outburst of clapping and applause. They really like her. Another incident, she was confronted by a man who was near hysterical in the park, denouncing her because she did not believe in the Holocaust. And she told him the same thing. I'm glad you recognize I'm not a person who is so foolish as to still believe that stuff. And he then, in a rage, you see, these people don't want to have an argument. They don't say, well, aren't you aware of this and this and this? And then she could say, well, those aren't facts. Or she could say, but you know, here's the way to look at it. No. These people are fanatics. And they don't want a discussion. They don't want a debate. They simply want to destroy and denounce. So he then ran around the park, yelling, screaming hysterically at people. That woman does not believe in the Holocaust. That woman denies the Holocaust. And people looked at him as if he was a certifiable nut. And then he came back and spat at her. One of the people at our meeting last night said, you know, under Canadian law, that's assault. You know, assault is not just hitting somebody with your fist or hitting them with a stick. That's assault, what that guy did to you. And it shows the profoundly low quality of some of these people, the Holocaust maniacs. Imagine spitting at somebody. I mean, that's really low stuff. But she's finding that many of the town officials who in the past have walked by and pretended they didn't see her, many are actually, I'm not going to name who these are, but are appearing a lot more friendly. And it's also not gone unnoticed in the town that she is still there, is still playing, is still out there smiling and enjoying herself, and she feels that she really is beginning to win a number of these cowards back. And let's talk about meanness. There was a concert, not at the Legion, a recital, I guess you'd say, by a guitarist from Edmonton a little while ago. And there was a sign around town that gave the time and the place and the amount. It was $20 a head, and the tickets were $20. And that's all it said. So she and a friend of hers appeared the night of the concert, or the recital, 20 minutes or so early, and asked, presented their money and asked to, you have to buy tickets in advance. And she said, well, that's not what the sign said. Well, it's on the webpage. It's on the Facebook. And she said, well, I'm not on Facebook. And the poster advertising this event did not say you had to buy tickets in advance. Well, one of her major tormentors came and bluntly told her she could not get in. Anyway, so she and her friend went back to where they'd seen the poster advertising the recital and took it down and brought it back to show. And the person who seemed to be in charge of the recital, who's being one of her tormentors, was nervously pacing up and down, and then she said, I could see him shouting to someone back, they're back, they're back. These people are so cowardly and so afraid. Monica is a total non-violent person. All she wanted was to pay her money, sit there quietly, and hear the guitar recital. She tried to explain to the woman who was on the door, look, this is what your poster said. I, in good faith, have shown up with my money, would like to attend. The door was slammed in her face, and that was it. You know, these petty, the petty behavior of small-minded, small-town people, persecuting a woman for the nonviolent expression of her beliefs. And you know, I'm sure if you ask most of these people, have they read an editorial recently, there's actually quite an impassioned, I guess, a thought piece by a fellow named Robert Fulford in the National Post. And it's about a Chinese, I think he's a Nobel Prize winner, who died a horrible death in prison just recently of cancer. The Red Chinese authorities, he was a dissident, would not allow him out for proper treatment. And this Robert Fulford wrote a very impassioned defense of him and condemnation of those who persecute free speech and what a vile regime the Red Chinese government is. I totally agree. I agree with everything he said. I have been meaning to write to Fulford, though, and say, but Robert, bad, the Chinese are really bad. No question about it. I agree with you totally. But we do much the same thing. I mean, maybe not quite to that extent. And I'd like to know how many of those people in town might have read Fulford's piece and said, oh, yeah, right, one for free speech. Well, oh, those Chinese, boy, those Red Chinese, they're real rotters. Of course, they're right. They're great, right? But what about what they did to Monica? You don't like her views, and she's not allowed to pay her money to hear a recital? I might understand if they might have an objection if she jumped up and started to give a political lecture during the recital. That might be a fair objection, but she didn't do that. She's never done that. That's not her way. But she feels that things are beginning to turn around in the small town of Jasper, Alberta. Well, I'm going to be back with you in just a couple of minutes. I'm going to take a short musical interlude, and we'll tell you a really heartbreaking story about a German man I met at the meeting last night in Edmonton, Alberta. And talk about mean behavior to other people. There is, unfortunately, even to this day, still a lot of German bashing. I'd like to play a tune tonight. I've played this a few times before, and this is Miss Patti Loveless, and it's called "You'll Never Leave Harlan Alone." Never Leave Harlan Alive. That's Harlan County, Kentucky, coal mining country in eastern Kentucky, and the people who mine coal are a particular type of very resilient white people. Many of them started poor, many of them remained poor. It was a hard, dangerous life, but they built a strong community and good values. And Patti Loveless in this song reflects those values. Patti herself, as she will say, is the daughter of a coal miner. Her grandfather was a coal miner. And she's also related, and I'm not quite sure, I think as a cousin, but I could be wrong there, to another coal miner's daughter, woman who often, that was her name, the coal miner's daughter, and that was Loretta Lynn. This is Patti Loveless, "You'll Never Leave Harlan Alive."
And my dad, he was a coal miner also. Actually, my whole family's life revolved around the coal mines. But in 1968, my dad decided to move us all to Louisville, Kentucky, in seek of medical treatment for black lung disease and many other medical problems that he had. Even though Daddy died in Louisville back in 1979, he, like the rest of them, never survived those mines. In the deep, dark hills of eastern Kentucky, that's the place where I trace my bloodline, and it's there I read on a hillside gravestone, "You'll never leave
Patti Loveless, and You'll Never Leave Harlan Alive. Really celebrates the resilience of the mountain people. the coal miners, almost all white. Here's a song I think hope you like. This is another very talented young lady, much younger lady. This is Sierra Hull, and this is a bluegrass gospel song called River of Jordan.
John the Baptist met him there. When John baptized Jesus in Jordan's rushing water, the mighty power of God filled the air. I'm on my way
to the river of Jordan.
Gonna wait right in
the rushing water.
I'm going there.
I'm going down to the river of Jordan. And let the cool waters cleanse my soul.
Sierra Hull, and that's the River of Jordan. I'll play one more tune, and this is Rhonda Vincent. Also, I guess, bluegrass gospel. She's a big bluegrass singer. The Old Rugged Cross.
On a hill far away stood an old rugged cross, the emblem of suffering. And I love that old cross where the dearest death fell. Oh. Thank you.
That's Rhonda Vincent and the Old Rugged Cross. And this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, I had a very, very sad story told to me last night. And by a gentleman who's in his early 80s. His family came from Germany in 1928 and settled in a kind of hard scrabble country south and west of Edmonton. And They homesteaded, which meant they didn't buy an existing farm. They broke the land. They had to till the fields for the first time. They had to, as they say, bust the sod. And it was not the most productive of areas. They had a little bit of they raised some cattle. They raised some chickens. Some wheat. Kind of mixed farming, but enough for the family to survive. He said they didn't have electricity, you know, and anyway, that was not really the burden of the story. During the Second World War, there was very big animosity to German people living in that part of Alberta. He said some of their neighbors were British or in origin and were nice people. Some were not. After war was declared, the RCMP, the Mounties, came around and confiscated the guns of German people, including his father's .22 and shotgun, which the father used to shoot varmints like coyotes and wolves and to hunt for food for the family. My father was a very meek and uncomplaining sort of guy, and so he said, well, he will just take up trapping instead. Now, that's the way they put food on the table for their family. This wasn't an optional. Okay, well, that's not the worst of the story. My old friend, who's in his 80s, attended a small rural school with his older brother. And the older brother was a couple of years older than my friend. And the teacher, who I take it was a middle-aged spinster, had a particular hatred for Germans and made no secret of the fact she hated German people. And one day, his brother was playing a little bit away from the school during the lunch hour and did not hear the bell and came into the class 5 minutes late. Well, at the end of class, the other students headed home. My friend was told to go home too, but his brother would be kept behind he thought, for a detention. But something bothered my friend that it just didn't seem right. For one thing, the teacher was quite eager to get rid of my friend. You know, and she didn't say give a time limit and say, well, we're going to keep your brother in for half an hour or something like that for his detention. He went partway home, and he was smaller, he's young, and he turned around and went back to the school and was horrified what he saw on the lawn out in front of the school. There was his brother, unconscious, severely beaten, his back covered with blood, his little shirt torn open. And to this day, my friend does not know what the teacher beat the boy with that would bloody him and leave him unconscious, bleeding. This was a psycho assault because the boy was German. Not for the offense of coming in 5 minutes late. Yes, of course, the teacher has to maintain discipline. Yes, perhaps the boy should have been in some way reprimanded for not hearing the bell, for not being sharp. Yeah, of course. But to beat him like that, this is not discipline. This is psychosis. Well, the boy was kept home for a month to recover. So we're not talking about a spanking on the bottom, or we used to give kids the strap on the hand. And yes, the hand would sting for, you know, for a few minutes, and it wouldn't be pleasant. But this is far different from slapping somebody, strapping them on the hand, or slapping spanking their bum a little bit. This is the sort of utter psychotic brutality, born of hatred of the German people. When he helped his brother home, the mother was appalled, the father was appalled as well, and the mother said, well, we have to go to the police. And yes, this is not a matter of a little bit excessive discipline, but this is, in anybody's book, vicious child abuse and assault. But the father wouldn't. The father was not a complainer. And this is, but in my opinion, there's a big difference between being a chronic belly acher and complainer and a case like this. And the father said, well, the police wouldn't do anything because they took our guns. Now, in the years and years of hindsight, my friend, whose brother this was, said, you know, I don't think that's true. The police who seized the guns didn't do it out of personal animosity. They'd probably be told that, take the guns from all the Germans who are in the community. I know, racial discrimination. Well, that doesn't matter where Germans are concerned, open season. Now, that's what they were told, and regardless of whether they liked it or not, that's what was done. And my friend believes that the police would have taken a case like this seriously. I mean, how do you defend an assault where the child, I think he was 10 years old at the time, is left severely bloody and so badly beaten he can't go to school for a month? Now, how do you defend that? I don't think any reasonable Christian person could. But that's all hindsight. And the point my friend was making was that while there were many good people that he knew growing up, there was an element of people who were, you know, deeply, deeply anti-German. These are the sort of stories, you know, the Germans tend not to be complainers, unlike Jews, who revel in being victims. It's their calling card. But it's part of the North European psychology. We don't like belly achers. We don't like complainers. If things are tough, you just put your nose to the grindstone and work harder. But these stories, in my opinion, have to come out. They have to come out to balance the Mount Everest of lies and defamations that are heaped on the German people particularly, and whites in general. And these are stories that I particularly think young Germans should hear, but other people, so that they will appreciate what a teacher of mine, Father Mullins, used to say when if somebody complained, well, sorry, things are tough all over. This is a different mindset, but it's a mindset I think we should try to get back. Yes, if there's a problem, I think it ought to be brought to light, but what we have today is far too many people who are just professional victims, you know. And it's something we have to fight against, because we're vulnerable to that. As Europeans, particularly North Europeans, we're vulnerable to that approach. I'm a victim. Oh no, you're a victim? Well, we've got to try to help you. Well, in many cases, they're not victims. And we have, I think, a better perspective if we realize that many people have been victimized, including many of our own people. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Back with you again tomorrow, same time, midnight Eastern time. The show is repeated at 8 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. All of those are Eastern Standard Time. And I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf. Forever. Thank you.